I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am thrilled to be here with you yet again. A lot going on as we move into this Christmas holiday season, so I'm going to address that first. It is the Christmas holiday season. It's also the time of year where we celebrate, our Jewish friends celebrate Hanukkah, which is a beautiful celebration of the miracle of the lights. So I think we need to enjoy everybody's holidays, okay? Towards the end of the month, there's going to be Kwanzaa. Let's enjoy that holiday too. We're all Americans. We should be able to enjoy each other's traditions without going after each other, okay? So this is the Christmas season traditionally, and that's what I call it. I say Christmas. I say Merry Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everybody out there in Chasing Justice Land. Happy Hanukkah, if that is your holiday coming up. And, you know, happy Kwanzaa, if that's yours, and whatever else you're celebrating. If you're celebrating because it's about love, God, family, friends, I think we should enjoy everybody's holidays because all of them, when they're about those things, are beautiful. So I'm looking and I'm saying, what's going on with the investigation, with their attack on our president? Very, very unique. A lot of things broke in the last bunch of days. We saw that the president's attorney, Mr. Cohen, apparently, according to the left-wing media, which is other than America Out Loud, there's very few outlets where we can actually hear the truth. Mr. Cohen has flipped. So let me explain this, how this works for people who don't understand flipping. You know, how do you flip somebody? Why do you flip somebody? Is it ethical? Is it not ethical? As a police officer, as an investigator, we would go out and say we're trying to get Johnny the drug dealer. Now, Johnny the drug dealer is selling a lot of drugs, lots and lots, but he's not the one actually driving the drugs back and forth. He's not the one who's actually on the street corner selling the drugs. He's not the guy who's actually taking the money. Johnny the drug dealer is the one who makes the connections, and he has other people do basically the dirty work. So he keeps himself removed from it, but he is the head of the organization. Now, I'm talking here about a large-scale organization, not the guy you see on the street, you know, slinging bags of marijuana or selling some pills or something. We're talking someone who's making a lot of money off of drug dealing, and they have an organization, whether it be a gang, street gang, or whether it be any other type of loosely knit organization that's not a street gang. You could certainly have somebody who simply has a bunch of players who work for him or her, and they sell the drugs, they do everything with the drugs, and he or she gets all the money and doles it out as they go. So here's how that works. You can't just roll up on him, because if you were to hit Johnny the drug dealer, he's not going to have the drugs on him. So you're not going to be able to make a case against him. He's not selling it in the street. He's not transporting it. You're never going to catch him doing that. So what you need to do is to start the investigation. You need to get some information. You need to understand how the organization works. So what you normally do is you find someone who's very low on the totem pole. Maybe that's someone who's a buyer of the drugs, and you see them make a hand-to-hand transaction with a salesperson in the street, and you arrest that person who bought the drugs. People that buy drugs are either addicted people, or people who use drugs recreationally, or people who are, you know, they're just usually regular people who, for whatever reason, are using the drugs. Pot, cocaine, heroin, pills, whatever it is. You arrest that person for possession. That person is now in the system. And if they are in the system, if they've had previous arrests, if they've had previous run-ins with the law, at some point, they could be looking to go to jail. And it could be for 365 days, or it could be for 10 or 20 years. So if you want to work this organization over, you need information. You need to understand how it operates, who does what, where the drugs are, where they're going to run, so that you can work your way up the chain to eventually find, you know, Johnny the drug dealer. You want to get him, but you're not going to get him if you don't have all the bit players down below. So as an investigator, we would get information from somebody, either that be an informant, someone who's trying to work off a charge. Hey, listen, I want to tell you, Detective, there's a guy sells drugs on the corner of 3rd and Main. He's hooked up with a bigger organization. I don't know them, but I know that guy. You know, he's slinging some coke down in the corner there, or heroin, or whatever it is. So then you set up a surveillance, you observe a hand-to-hand, you take off the buyer. Now you get the buyer who's concerned. They don't want to go to jail. They don't want to have trouble. And you say to them, hey, if you can provide me with some information, I can help you with your charges. Now, to a lot of people, like in our neighborhood, Jim the Contrarian, he might have a big problem with that, that you're using one person against another. But this is the basic element of a law enforcement investigation. Investigations rise and fall on information, facts, and evidence. And there's only so many ways you can get that information, facts, and evidence. So flipping someone is a very common practice. So you go to this person that you arrested and say, hey, give me some information, I can help you with your charges. That help might be speaking to the charging officer, who then speaks to the judge and says, judge, you know, the person's cooperating, can they get out without posting a bail? The judge may or may not agree to that. So if the judge agrees, you go back to the guy or the girl and you say, listen, judge says, if you cooperate and you help us, you give us good information, there'll be no bail on your charge today. You'll be free to go. You'll have to come to court, of course, but there's no bail today. So you don't go to jail today. Doesn't mean you won't go to jail down the road, but for today. So that's the deal you could be. And you flip that person. So now they start to tell you, okay, well, I always buy it off of this guy named Harry. Harry stands on that corner. He's there all day long, but he's never there between 3 and 5 o'clock at night. I don't know what he does at that time, but then he's back at 5:30. And if you go stand there, you'll see him do drug sales all day long. So then we go back there and we watch and we see this guy, Harry. We identify him. We figure out who he is. And we see him doing a lot of hand-to-hands. We take off other buyers. They start to give us statements. We flip them. Now, once we have enough, maybe we send an undercover officer in. The undercover now buys from Harry. So once that undercover buys from Harry, now you can sign a criminal complaint against Harry for selling drugs, because now you have a great witness, you have a law enforcement officer undercover. So now we run down on the corner and we grab Harry and we arrest Harry and we get him with his drugs, we get him with his money. Now we're charging him not just with the possession of any drugs he has on him, but we're charging him with distribution, which is a much more serious crime. So now you charge him. Now you drag Harry into headquarters and you say, Harry, you've got two other arrests in your past. You've had a conviction for possession. And now we're charging you with distribution of whatever drug it is. You're looking at 3 to 5 years in prison. Can you provide us with any information to help yourself? Now, again, this is the part of the thing that some people have a problem with, because you're going to give him a better deal to give you information. But if we don't get that information, we're never going to be able to climb up the ladder to get the main guy or girl who's causing all this chaos in the streets with this drug dealing if we don't shut off the top of the organization. So now Harry says, listen, if I tell you, if I give you some information, will you keep me out of jail? You say, well, we can't make a promise, because law enforcement officers cannot make a promise to anyone of what's going to happen in court. That's up to the prosecutor and the judge. But what we can say, and what we often say to people, is we will make your cooperation known. We will tell the judge and the prosecutor, you did the right thing to help us to take a really bad guy off the street. Now, the reality of these investigations is, if the judges didn't go along with it and the prosecutors didn't go along with it, then and nobody ever got any help with their charges, that word would get out on the street rather quickly. And therefore, no one would ever help, and we would never be able to solve, whether it's a drug crime, burglary sprees, a homicide, whatever it is, we would never get people to cooperate. So it's in their interest sometimes to cooperate and give us the information. Over the course of my career, on many, many, many occasions, I've had people's attorney call me and say, listen, my guy got grabbed doing whatever, and he has information he can exchange. Can he work with you? And I said, sure, come on in. I listened to the guy's story. I call the prosecutor. Here's what I got. And the prosecutor will work out, you know, whatever they're willing to do to help this person. Of course, the judge has the final say in whether or not the judge, he or she, agrees to whatever deal the prosecutor makes. But the cops on the street can't make that deal. They can certainly make it known to everybody above them, this person cooperated. And like I said, if the judges didn't do this and the prosecutors didn't do it, it would never work. So there's kind of a lot of confidence in the system as a law enforcement person that, you know, the judges are looking to get the bad guys off the street, not necessarily go after just the low-end users, contrary to popular belief. So now Harry flips and Harry says, okay, well, listen, I get my drugs from Steven. Steven shows up every Tuesday night. He comes to my apartment. He brings me 2 pounds of weed, 500 pills, and 2 ounces of coke. I whack it up, and then I go sell it. My salesmen go out and sell it. Say, okay, so when's the next time he's coming? He's coming Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. Okay. So we set up on the location, and maybe we have an undercover officer in the house with Harry. Steven shows up, drops off the dope. We see the transaction. Maybe we use our money for him to pay it off, whatever it is. It can take many different locations. And the drug transaction can go to he starts dealing with the undercover, or we just wait for him to step outside and we lock him up. And now we have him delivering a large amount of drugs, which now is very serious jail time involved. Now we try and take Steven and say, Steven, we just got you delivering all these drugs. You're going to go to jail for 15 years, or you can help us. Eventually, Steven realizes, uh-oh, I don't want to go to jail for 15 years. My guy is Johnny the drug dealer. And here's how he makes the deals. Here's who he talks to. Here's who we call. We get wiretaps. We do all that legal search warrants, all that stuff. And we end up getting Johnny the drug dealer. So when you hear people saying that people are flipping in the Mueller investigation against the president, this is what the prosecutor is doing. He's going after people that have small bits of involvement in things, and they're holding them to account. So these are people who are not street criminals that are used to going to county jail or having to get bailed out. These are people who are professionals. These are business people. These are military people. You grab them up for some process crime, which is lying to an FBI agent, which is actually a crime, a felony. And you grab that person and say, hey, you're going to jail for 1 year or 5 years. Now, this is a professional person. Now they're going to go to jail. That person will say, okay, what is it you want to know? And they say, well, tell us what you know about President Trump and the Russians. I don't really know anything because President Trump didn't do anything with the Russians. Well, you had to have heard something. He has to be in conversation. And that's how the prosecutor keeps pushing these people. So in the last week, we saw the writer, Corsi, who was apparently got caught in a lie, which if you listen to his story, basically he turned over all his computers. He turned over his phones, everything. The guy's in his 70s. They asked him if he made a phone call to somebody, and he said he didn't. When they look on his phone records, the phone he gave them, they see that he did make a phone call to that person. So that's considered lying to the FBI. They can charge you with a crime, put you in jail, even if you made a mistake. So there's only two ways that a thing like that can go. You either purposely lied because you didn't want to say you ever called that person, or you forgot. So I'm going to say out there, do people actually forget in criminal investigations? They do. People really do. They'll forget, especially if they're involved in a lot of things. So this guy, Corsi, he feels he was tricked into that. That's a process crime because they don't have any real collusion with the president. He didn't collude with anybody as far as anybody can really tell. But the mission of the Mueller investigation is not really collusion, because we know there was none, and collusion itself is not a crime. What they're trying to do is they're trying to find anything that they can pin on the president so that they can use a political avenue to drive him out of office, because the Mueller investigation is run by people who are anti-Trump. You have the people on the left who are completely anti-Trump and just want him out, and you have people on the right who do not like the fact that Trump is not a politician. He came from the business world, and that he is in there shaking up their world. They don't like it. They want him out, too. So you have that triumvirate of the left-wing Democrats, the never-Trumping people who just don't like Trump and the Republican Party, and then you have the everybody else that's left in the middle who just, this is not right. We want this guy out of here. And they are in a cabal, an agreement without words, that they understand, hey, this is the way we get this guy. We'll flip somebody to say he lied about something. Will make a great case for the Democrat Congress now, who is itching to impeach him. And impeachment is actually a political action, all right? If President Trump had the ratings, 58% approval ratings, 60% approval ratings, they would never go near impeachment because he would have that majority of Americans who were behind him. So they would never make that move because that would be a political decision to go after a president who's that popular. So we don't have that. Trump is about in the 40s, 42%. I think the reality is, just like the election, there's lots of people out there, lots of people listening to my voice right now that are supporters of President Trump that will never say it in public, that will never post it on Facebook or anywhere else on social media because they don't want the backlash. So I think that his popularity amongst the American people is actually higher than that 40% that he maintains. But because it's not any higher publicly in the polls, the politicians feel emboldened to go after him because that entire cabal wants to remove him. They do not like that he's not from the political class. They do not like that he's really worried about you, the American people. He's worried about making sure we get the best deal in America as opposed to the rest of the world. He wants to make sure that you, the American people, get more of your money back. And we know that government runs on how much money they can take from you and me to run the government. Money is power. So here's a guy who wants to give you back your money. He wants to make sure we have the best deals, which screws up a lot of their side deals that these politicians have with people, you know, the lobbyists that come in and want them to do things and they donate to their campaigns. It is a dirty, dirty business. So when I look at this investigation, I have to say, if there was collusion, if the president actually called Vladimir Putin and said, hey, listen, you got to help me win, and then I'm going to do a lot of good things for Russia, and we're going to work together to make the world, pro-Russia on everything. That would be a bad thing. Then you have an American reaching out to a foreign government to try and affect an election. That'd be a bad thing. I'd be the first one to say that's bad. We don't have that here. It didn't happen. But the entire investigation, Mueller investigation, is set up by the anti-Trump Republicans, the anti-Trump Democrats, and they are working together to remove this president, to take away your vote, because they do not want him there. They are actually in power. So I look back and I say, what would our forefathers think about this? I think they would be horrified. This is exactly why they had a revolution. This is exactly what they got away from, the tyranny of the government that decides and the governmental class that decides what the rest of us have to live with. This investigation, whether you like Trump or not, is dangerous to every single one of us. Even you, my friends on the left, and I know you listen because you send me emails. This is dangerous to you also. When you give the government this much power, you're endangering yourself and your own future. So pay attention to this investigation. Watch where it's going. Why don't they have that smoking gun of Trump doing a bad thing? Because he didn't do it. They're making up a lot of it, and they're going after people, threatening them to say things that they're going to say to save themselves from that prison sentence. So Chasing Justice fans, family, friends, everybody out there, thanks for being here this week. We have an interesting show for you. We're going to have the neighborhoods here. We got Kathy on the neighborhood with us this week. And we're also going to do some interesting stuff. We're going to try and talk to Ronald Reagan in segment number 3. So stick with us here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Today in the neighborhood, we have a special group. Now, first of all, we all want to think about Jack Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson, who is not feeling well today. So let's think about Jack. He has stomach bug or something, but we didn't want him here in the room with the rest of us. So as a replacement for Jack, we have Kathy. Kathy, welcome aboard.
Hey, everybody.
So it's interesting to have Kathy. She brings a woman's perspective. She also brings fire. She brings energy, and she will not hold back to tell us how much of an idiot we all are.
The idiot stick, isn't that what
the idiot stick she'll hit us with? That next to my right over here, we have Jim, the contrarian Giordano. Jim is always the guy that takes the opposite side, usually, but it's usually for a good reason. Jim, how are you this week?
I'm doing great, and I just wanted to point out that the reason why Jack didn't show up, because we're doing point counterpoint, and Jack is a chicken.
Jack is he's a chicken. Afraid he's going to lose against you? That's not it. He's really okay. Sick, Jim.
So let's clue the audience in here. So one of the things we want to have is a feature called Point Counterpoint, where I take two of the stellar minds here in the neighborhood and pit them against each other as a point counterpoint. We were going to do that this week with Jack and Jim, but Jack's not feeling well. So, Jack, I don't think you're afraid. I think you just didn't want to beat Jim in public and humiliate him in the holiday time. So we'll leave it at that for now. And also here we have Bill, the man of faith, Dallas. Bill, welcome aboard.
What do I say after that?
Well,
I'm glad to be here.
Be careful, because on your right, you'll get hit with the idiot stick. On your left, he'll disagree with you. Well, all right, so one of the things that we see going on in our country, we want to talk about here, because this is, I think, affects everybody. It started slow and it's building up steam, is the legalization and decriminalization of marijuana. Now, we saw this coming years and years ago when it started in Colorado. We saw a movement there to have medical marijuana. And here where we are in New Jersey, there is also medical marijuana. It was for limited types of conditions, three or four different types of painful conditions that they were allowed to prescribe this to you for. Thank you, Kathy. And that number has grown now. Now it's anxiety, itchy feet, you don't feel like going to work, whatever it is, you can get a prescription now for marijuana. And now we're seeing more and more states jumping on board to either decriminalize personal use amounts of marijuana or to outright make it recreation available and then tax it and get money from it. So one of the things we kind of want to have here is a point counterpoint in a different version, because I think let's go around the room and just see here who thinks we should decriminalize or legalize. Start with Jim. Go.
Well, I think the marijuana use should be decriminalized, even though I would agree with the fact that it is not a good drug and there's a lot of detrimental consequences from using it.
Okay. Big Bill?
I don't think marijuana should be legalized in any format whatsoever. I think it, even though people say it's not a gateway drug, I firmly believe that it does lead to bigger and more horrible drugs. I'm not proud of it, but I've experimented with a lot of different things back in the 60s. I grew up then, and sometimes I think maybe I grew up backwards because I made a lot of mistakes back then.
Okay, so you're against. You're
surprising
against.
You can remember it.
Well, they say that if you can remember the 60s, you really weren't a part of it.
So you have some blackouts because you were at it. Actually, we talked about this. You were at Woodstock, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
You were the guy in the front with that candle. You were the first one to hold the candle up, I think. That's true. So, Kathy, where do you stand on this issue?
Well, I definitely feel like it should be illegal if the government was capable of actually enforcing that to a point and not putting people away for that ounce of pot. To see poor people, people without the right medical care, self-medicating, going to jail for all that is ridiculous. So the government's not actually going to do it. I don't think it's a healthy drug. I think it's a bad drug. I think it's going to hurt more people than it's helping. But this country cannot actually enforce its laws. So why put all these people in jail?
Okay, that's an interesting
point. That's like opening the door a crack, because that little bit of room that you're giving them, that's going to create a wider and wider opening, and before you know it, that door's going to be wide open, and it's going to eventually lead to bigger and more horrible drugs.
If you wanted to get pot today, could you?
What's that?
Anybody could get pot today. It is a ubiquitous drug. So
what does ubiquitous mean?
It's around.
Okay.
It's all around. It's
well,
anybody who wants to get it can get it.
I like the use of the word, Jim. Thank you.
You're welcome. So the fact of the matter is, if you decriminalize, if you keep it illegal, you're putting all these people in jail. We're using up resources, police resources, court resources, and actually the consequence of getting caught affects people's lives dramatically. Although I would agree with you, using the drug all the time has long-term problems, and everybody that I've known who continue to use pot, even at my age, they have a very problematic life.
Okay, hang on a second, fellas. Let me jump in here a minute and let me do a couple of points. First of all, I don't know if anybody heard, Jim was making a comment, and I had a satian point to make here as the host of the show, and I got shushed by Kathy.
Okay? So let's set the rules here. Okay? This is not our marriage. This is my show. So when I make a point, we don't shush the host. But that being said, Jim did have a good point, so I'm glad I let him go. Jim and Bill, let me bring up something that I have said all the time about gateway drugs and other types of drugs. Marijuana, I don't see it physically, it does not make you go from smoking pot to now I need heroin or I need cocaine or I need some other type of drug. It doesn't do that. But it breaks down the barrier where you don't use any illegal drugs for recreational things. And then you start smoking pot and you see that it's fun, it feels good. So people are more apt, especially young people, are then more apt to then try other kinds of drugs, which can lead into horrible, horrible addictions. Jim, your point about people whose lives where they constantly smoke pot is a very good one. And I know you have some information to add to that conversation. What we see across the board is that people that have small amounts of marijuana, that just they're smoking a joint and they get arrested by the police. All right. Now they have a drug arrest on their record, maybe when they were 18 or 19 years old. And it was for marijuana. They weren't a drug dealer. They weren't addicted. They weren't out robbing places. But they have to forever, the rest of their life, say, I have a drug conviction, which is very, very damaging to people. And that's where I think a lot of the thought now is going, because it is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. You know, what are we who are we penalizing with this? And I think it can be damaging. So point counterpoint here. It sounds like Bill is completely against it. And Kathy and Jim, you're for decriminalization for those reasons. Is that correct?
Correct.
I don't want to see people have to have the horrors of smoking pot at 18 carry on with them the rest of their lives. Bill, I don't know if you were ever arrested, but imagine if you were and you now have a wife and kids and you want to get a job. Now you can't because people think you're a drug user. And you were a drug user. You just never got caught. And you got to, well, I'm guessing there. Okay. I'm saying that's the problem here is these people are still going to be using it. And it's a problem because now it might be people who wouldn't have used it might try it.
That's my next point to that gateway drug. Right now, marijuana is illegal. So there are millions of people who will not buy and smoke marijuana. When you make it legal, there are millions of people who will try it. The same goes for that open door bill. You open that door to heroin, cocaine, all these other things. There are millions of people who would never go near it. Once it's legal, they might try it. And out of those millions of people, you might have thousands and thousands of people who become physically addicted and their lives and their families would be destroyed.
I think it's so prevalent in the country. Anybody who wants to get pot can get pot. In the 70s, I grew up in the 70s, everybody smoked pot, and not everybody, very few people became addicted to the drug.
Mm-hmm.
Very few, but there were some who did, and again, I don't want to be repetitive, but in every instance, those people who continue to smoke it every day, daily, now I'm not talking recreationally, these people's lives are ruined.
Okay, so let's ask out there in the Chasing Justice audience, do you know anybody in your life that smoked pot when they were younger who continued, as Jim is saying, and look at their lives. Are they the most productive people? And everyone's always going to have that, you know, that, oh, I know a guy, he's the CEO of a big company and he smoked pot. That's the one-off. I think you're absolutely right. People that smoke all the time, they're not motivated, it causes problems.
Maybe they weren't going to be motivated beforehand. The people I know who have that problem had a terrible home life growing up. They had no ambition to work anyway. What came first, the pot or the lack of motivation?
If the government is going to start regulating pot, they're going to have to make it a age thing where
you
they have to
so.
Be 18 or however old. Let me ask you, Jim, when buying alcohol was 21, did you ever have a drink before, you know, you turned 21?
First of all, 18 when I was, and okay. Yes, I did have drinks before.
All right.
I did have drinks before it was legal.
So what's going to stop anybody from buying pot before they're of age? They're not. And the biggest problem is that...
Well, thank you for making my point, by the way, Bill.
Well, I'm gonna bash it in a second.
If you could get
school age, Well, yeah. Why do I keep getting interrupted? School-age kids are going to be using it regardless of what the age is. They're going to get it. They don't have to be 18. And what's going to happen is their scholastic achievements are going to tank. It happens all the time. That's proven.
Proven?
The more they smoke in class or when they're of school age.
Were you smoking today, Bill?
Yeah, I feel like it. No, but when you're school age and you have all the homework and you have to learn and do different things, that doesn't
get... When have you been in a high school lately? For God's sakes, how old are you? 80 years old? You have not been in a high school. I'm telling you right now, they are getting high in that high school anyway. My son can't even use a bathroom because they're getting high so much in the school. Teachers have to stand outside and let two kids in at a time. 2,400 kids in a school, you can't get to a bathroom during the day. So they're getting high anyway.
Okay. All right. So that's just let it go on. I'm in high schools, I'm in vocational schools, I'm in community colleges at least twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I work with them. I see the damage that drugs do to these kids.
Agreed.
And by allowing it, their older brother can buy it for them. Their parents who sometimes can even buy it for them.
Isn't that happening right now?
That's what I mean. Exactly. Like, how is it going to change? Because you're going to keep it illegal. They're still
so we
high
just
now.
Make it easier for them.
Now then you're going to throw
make
another
burden for them, and then we just give up on trying to corral it.
That's where decriminalization, not making it legal. That's where that
decriminalization or making it legal is the same thing. You're giving them access to it. And by giving them access to it, you're damaging them.
You just admitted that the access is they have access now to it.
Right, so let me try and level that off.
But it's harder for them to get that.
Let me try and level this off for you.
They want to make it easier for them.
Let me level it off for you. Decriminalization simply means that if somebody gets caught with pot, they're not going to get arrested. They're not going to have a permanent record. Doesn't mean they won't pay a fine, but they don't get that fingerprinted drug arrest for the rest of their life. Legalization means they can use it and open up those doors and maybe lead into other things. What I have seen, and I know people that are adults that are my age, I chose to make a different path. I went to law enforcement. I know other people did not. They continued to party. And if you're going to drive around with pot and smoking pot in your car, eventually you're going to get pulled over. You're going to get arrested. These people can't get any other kind of a job when they have to mark down, I have a drug arrest. Even though it was 32 years ago, nobody cares. It's a drug arrest. Now, you can maybe get it expunged if it was only pot. That's expensive. So where are we going with these kids? Like you said, these kids, lots and lots of these kids are smoking pot. Do we burden them with that? Especially kids who don't have parents who have good lawyers to do it.
What I was going to say is if we decriminalize it and then we also say jobs do not want you smoking pot, certain jobs, I don't want my bridge builder, I don't want my surgeon, I don't want them smoking pot, I want to have them drug tested. What if the same thing in school?
On occasion, Kathy?
I'm telling you, I don't want to know. If there's a drug test that can tell me my surgeon smoked pot 6 weeks ago, that's fine. But I don't want him smoking pot the night before he's going to operate on my
drinking?
Brain.
How's
and what's going to prevent you from knowing that? Nothing.
No, but the job is going to say, to work here for me, you need to be drug-free, and you're going to take these random
drug tests. Mm-hmm.
And then the same thing for kids in school. You want to participate in sports, you want to go to the prom, you have to be drug-free. Those are the kinds of things that you can say and mm-hmm. do to limit. Instead of having it the government coming down and limiting, have that capitalism kind of thing where you're going to work the community.
The family.
What you're going to do, this is what I want from you, and maybe better education. I don't know. I just don't think we can start sending babies to jail and giving them criminal records.
We're talking about school-age kids, you know, having an easier pipeline to drugs, period. You know,
well, what makes you think it's easier pipeline? I think that's where we're caught up on. I don't think it's an easier pipeline. Maybe a skosh easier, potentially. But I think the damage that's being done, I'll give you an instance, and I'll try to make this quick. There was a young boy in my son's high school who was number one or number two in the class. He had a future that was fantastic. He was going to a concert. The police walked up onto the train. They decided that they were going to look at him for some reason. They found a joint. He was going to a concert. Okay, is it good? No. He was kicked off the debate team. He has a conviction. He probably wasn't able to get into certain colleges because of this conviction. What benefit is that? With the boy was using it recreationally on occasion. That's not a problem.
How old was he?
How old was he at the time? He was, I guess, 18.
Okay. All right, so let me jump on Kathy's point here, though. If the sports team says that that's important not to be getting high, I think they set that rule. And if you want to participate in sports, then you abide by that rule.
Fair enough.
I think we can set those rules as parents, as school personnel, so that we don't have kids. Because a lot of kids don't want to get high, believe it or not. They just don't want to sit around and get high. Some kids don't want to drink. Bill's point is that if we make it so easy and available, lots of kids who don't get high will, and goes back to your point, once they start getting high, their grades are going to go down, they're going to end up doing nothing in life. So how do we prevent that? Because we're not going to prevent the pot. The pot's here, people are growing it, it's a money maker for everyone, so it's not going away. But how do we destroy people's lives over a joint? I don't know.
I'll give you something from personal. My brother, he was fantastic in sports in high school. He had scholarships to 3 different universities when he was a junior, and he got into partying because he was the big man on campus, and he started smoking pot. That led to pills and whatever else. His grades went down, his health went down. He lost all 3 scholarships, and he wound up working as a caretaker at a stadium. So. I mean, that's personal.
That's a personal story. And you know what? I think there's a lot to what everybody had to say here. I don't think we're going to solve this problem, but it's been a great segment. It was a lot of good talk from everybody. Now, as the host, I have to decide, you know, which side won. And, like, I'm going to take my own advice, okay? If you're not part of the solution, don't be a part of the problem. I would say Kathy wins. Very clearly, Kathy won that debate. Everyone out in Chasing Justice Land, I'm sure you're going to agree with me. We'll be right back for segment 3.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here we are. We're going to have a special, really special segment for you right here. But first, I want to talk about our sponsors. Let's talk about, first and foremost, True Security Design, my company. We are now, we went from being local to regional, and we are now have a national reach. If you need threat assessments for your schools, for your businesses, give us a call. We can help you out. Look us up online, www.truesecuritydesign.com. We are there to help you with policy writing, actual drills, practice, whatever it is that you need, we're there to help you. The Blue Magazine, for my law enforcement brothers and sisters, and really for everybody who wants to understand what law enforcement is all about. Whether or not the officers go on the train and search people and find their drugs, that's their job, Jim. Just saying. But The Blue Magazine, www.thebluemagazine.com. So take a look. And finally, MCON IT. You want to take a look at MCON IT. They are third-party data recovery specialists. In this day of cybercrime and cyber hacking, you might need somebody like MCON IT. Look them up, MCONIT.com. All right, so here we are. I'm thinking about the world and what's going on in the world today. And I look and I see we have President Trump, and I think he's doing a good job. But he is mired in controversy. You see, half the country is virulently against this man. They're fighting him. They're attacking him. The whole investigation, we could talk about that forever and ever, what they're doing right and wrong there. And then you go back before him and you see Obama. And I didn't agree with a lot of Obama's policies. I had a lot of trouble with it. But a lot of people liked it. They wanted to go towards socialism. But that was really difficult. We haven't had a real stand-up kind of a leader that can really bring us all together. Now, for one second, I would like to say that we recently lost President Bush, 41, who was a very decent man, a good family man. I thought he was a good president, a unique individual, and was a good man. So we're sorry for his family that lost their dad and our country that lost a great president. But what if we could speak to Ronald Reagan? What if Ronald Reagan could come back today, take a look at what's going around, and give us his opinion or give us some advice? Wouldn't it be great if we could do that here, just sitting around in the neighborhood?
That's a pretty cool idea. I wonder if anybody could like find a way to channel Ronald Reagan back.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I could hypnotize you, Joe, if you wanna take a shot at it.
Hypnotize
You can hypnotize me?
Yeah.
And what'll happen?
Well, you'll believe that by the time I finish with you, you will believe that you are Ronnie.
And maybe, wait. I think he's going to be able to act like Ronald Reagan. We can ask him questions.
I'm not so sure that he can act like him, but I'm sure that he'll give us some insights.
I've heard the channeling thing. If you're in hypnotism, actually, Ronnie might be able to come back. I mean, I don't know if it can happen through me. Jim, what about you?
I think channels are good.
I don't want to get started on all the negative pros and cons of channeling, but maybe there's some way we can have this.
Good point. Well, Bill, I'm willing to give it a try because I think everyone would like to hear from Ronald Reagan at this day and age.
I think that would be something.
So go ahead, do your stuff. How do we do this?
All right.
Do you have that watch to wave?
I've got this watch. It's a gold watch, and you see how shiny it is, Joe?
It's really very nice.
Yeah. It's just swinging back and forth. It's called the Arc of Time.
Oh, it's
and
just...
it's spinning.
Oh, it's going
and
around.
And I just want you to start thinking about politics. Not the bad things about politics, the good things
politics
about politics.
America.
And the good politicians. Wow. Now, we're going to go back a few years. We're going to go back a little bit further than you might be used to. Back when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. Now, he was a great man, wasn't he? And you think about him.
I like
Reagan. Get into his mind. And just think about the different things that he did for this country.
I think he's out.
He's out.
Oh, Bonzo. Right.
Okay.
So Bonzo.
Let's take advantage of this situation. Ask him anything you want. Ask him.
Wait.
I got one thing I want to ask him.
Go ahead.
Why were you so optimistic about the future when you were president?
Well, Bill...
It's Ronnie.
I have to tell you that it's great to be here in the neighborhood with all of you. I'm on the other side now, and I come back and I'm seeing you all here, and I just saw George. We passed in the hallway there, and you know, we were talking about America and how it's changed, and I was optimistic, Bill, back in the days, because America's best days were ahead of her, and I think that could still be possible, but I'm not sure.
Well, let me ask you this then. What do you think were some of the highlights of your office?
Well, now that's a great question, Bill. I think shutting down the communists was probably one of the best things I could have done for America and for the communists too, for all of us, because that was just going to lead to some fighting. Like, I was listening to this Chasing Justice. A lot of us in heaven listened to Chasing Justice, and I heard a lot of people arguing a little while ago, and by ending communism, I think I saved a lot of people.
I have a question, Ronald Reagan. This is very exciting because, you know, when you were president, you handled the press so well.
Well.
And Trump seems to be, like, really angry at them, and he throws people out of the press room. Do you have any advice for Donald Trump on how to handle the press?
Well, Kathy, That's a great question, and I do appreciate that. And no matter where you stand on an issue, you have to give people respect. And I think I always respected the reporters, even the stupid idiot ones that would say things to me that were ridiculous. Like that was that Sam Donaldson fellow when he would say, "Wait a minute there, Mr. President. Who did he think he was? Didn't he know I had the button available to me?" But of course, that was just a joke that time. But I would be respectful, Kathy, to everyone. And that is how I would answer those questions. And besides, I had Nancy standing right next to me to kind of help me out. You know, the way Joe has you.
That's yes. Good point.
That's great yeah. point. Thank you for yeah. bringing that up. That's good.
You know, I heard you say one time in an interview that you were convinced that this is a nation under God. And as long as we recognize that and believe that he will help us. Do you think that that's still possible under Trump?
Well, Bill, there you go again. You have these great questions. And I have to tell you, personally being dead myself and going over to the other side, I can tell you there is a God. And he's a good God. And we sat down and we talked. He says, "Ronnie, come on in here." And I said, "Well, hello, God. Nice to see you." And I kind of lost my train, and I was kind of bumbling, kind of the way you bumble around sometimes when you're talking on that Chasing Justice show. And then, you know, Nancy, when she got there, I was really glad because she had said to me, "Ronnie, make sure you say thanks for everything, God." And I did. I said, "God, thank you for everything." And I think America can go back to its godly roots. I do, because God is the essence of everything good. And that led me in my life and my presidency, Bill. So thank you very much for that question. I think that's a great question.
Hey, Jim, do you have a question for Ronnie?
Yeah, well, before you met with Gorbachev, you inferred in his speech that there were extraterrestrials visiting the Earth. Can you expand upon that for me and tell me, is it true or not true?
Well, Jim, if I still had Secret Service coverage, I would have you probably hauled away. Because, you know, I got to tell you a secret. Come close to the microphone. I'm going to tell you.
Yes.
There are aliens. There are aliens. The world, the universe is teeming with life. I saw them up here with God. Now, you think that the aliens you're worried about are the ones coming across the border. That's not the ones to worry about, Jim. But I'll tell you, if you don't let anyone else know. What's that? Nancy says I shouldn't let it out, but I'm telling you, it's the Grays, Jim. You're right. It's the Grays. This is really great talking to your Chasing Justice audience. You know, I feel good. I could you believe I'm still in a suit? Because I always wore a suit. I respected the office, and I respect Chasing Justice. That Joe fella is something, I'll tell you. We talk about him in heaven a lot.
He is something, I'll tell you.
Well, I got to tell you, I appreciate the opportunity, and it was great to see everyone, but Nancy's calling me back, and you know how that is. I'm going to head on back to the ranch. And America, look to your finer points. Look for your better angels. And remember, God and Ronnie are always watching over you. Goodbye now, and have a great Christmas season. And yeah, we call it Christmas up here, too. Have a nice
Bye,
day,
Ronnie.
Everyone. Goodbye now.
Bye, that
I'm
was...
I'm fading.
Joe's coming back.
Okay.
Joe.
Mm-hmm. All right, Joe. So, how did you...
Well, you got to do it, man. Wait, move the watch or something. Hypnotize me so I can... I want to do this. I want to give it a try.
No, it just didn't work.
This is ridiculous.
I couldn't do it.
Chasing Justice people, I'm sorry. We were going to try and channel Ronald Reagan, but obviously it didn't work. Bill's got this watch he's waving around, and...
don't remember anything.
No, he said he was going to wave a watch. I watched the watch. I didn't think nothing about it. I felt a little tired, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, so... Since we don't have Ronnie to talk to, let's have that conversation between ourselves here. Jim, what do you think about Reagan? What do you think he would think if he could see this? Or any of our forefathers, if they could see America today, what do you think they would think about it, really?
Reagan was a staunch anti-communist. And with the backdrop that he was a communist out of Hollywood for most of his life, he saw how detrimental that philosophy has been not only on the world, and he would be very disappointed in a polarized country currently because there is a good 40% of the population who believed that communism and socialism is the way to go. He also would be a little bit disappointed in President Trump because President Trump doesn't handle the news media like Ronald Reagan did. He was so charming. I remember coming home from work and saying, "Hey, Ronald Reagan." It was like watching the Super Bowl. He's on television.
He was excellent.
You just felt so good about yourself, so good about being an American, so good about what this country has to offer after all of his speeches.
Excellent. Kathy, what do you think about our forefathers? What would they think?
Well, I'm going to talk to Jim's point first.
Sure.
First of all, Ronald Reagan could be respectful and charming to the reporters because they had a respectful, charming way back. They had a respect for the office. You don't have that now. There's no respect whatsoever.
That's a great point.
So I don't know that Ronald Reagan would do any better in this vitriol that they have coming at us.
This attack.
Yeah, so he's not going to do much better. I think Ronald Reagan really wanted to prevent the breakdown of the family. He had set, I don't know if it was a czar or one of those, but he had someone guiding him on how to keep the family strong. He was a proponent. If we can keep the family strong, we can definitely help prevent a lot of educational problems, mm-hmm. drug problems, have a strong family. So I think that he would find that attack on the family very
detrimental. I agree with you, Kathy.
So there's two major things that have changed.
Yeah, you make a very good point. I think that the media was respected the office back in one. Listen, they still attacked him. They attacked him, they attacked Nancy, they attacked his family, but they still had a certain amount of respect and decorum.
Right.
Today, that's all been pushed out the window.
They respected the office, even if they didn't respect him. And you're right. I think everybody felt really good when he came on the air, whether it was the radio or TV. And reporters and news media gave him the respect of the office. It was the opposite parties that, you know, really gave him a hard time. But For the most part, he was like everybody's president. He was a great president.
By the end of his term, begrudgingly, I think even those on the left had to see what he did economically. He brought communism down, even though it finally fell under George Bush as vice president when he became president. But Reagan transformed our country from the malaise. We forget what happened at the end of the 60s and the early 70s were a mess. And it wasn't until Reagan took the helm that really kind of shook us out of that malaise and moved us into the modern world.
And it was that iconic few words, like, "Mr. Gorbachev, take down that wall," that just did it for most Americans.
Yeah. I mean, he had tremendous speech writers, and he delivered them powerfully.
Unlike me.
It was fantastic.
Well, he would take his message straight to the American people. No president since then. Trump a little bit. He goes on these. He goes to Indiana and he has these big
rallies.
Exactly.
But he does Twitter too. Trump. I mean, that's kind of. I mean, maybe to his detriment, but he does it. I mean, what would Ronald Reagan do? Would he have ever done that?
He wouldn't have to do that if the news media treated him fairly. This way, he goes straight to the American people, and he tells them exactly what he said, not something that was a few words taken out of context here or there. Mm-hmm. No, that's the reason why he tweets.
Part of the problem, and here's why the tweeting is part of our modern world. It is how we communicate. The press will not do, the media will not show up if it's a Republican president anymore, and he says, "I want to have a three network thing, I'm going to talk." They're like, no, they're not going to let you do it because they don't want you to get that message out. They refuse to do that. Where before, the president called a press conference, they turned everything off, and the president went on for as long as he wanted. Presidents have used those opportunities to talk directly to us. Gifted presidents have done that. Even Jimmy Carter had the fireside chats, and you can joke about them, where he came out in a sweater and he sat by the fire. He was trying to communicate to the American people, trying to give us his point of view. He's the president, so we should understand what's going on. I just look and I see the crassness, the disrespect for the office, the way they treat this man, the complete split in our country now that is so detrimental to our future that I can't imagine our forefathers, if they could rise from their graves, maybe if your hypnotism actually worked, but we could talk to one of them, if they could actually come back, if they would look at this country and say, this is where we were hoping it would go to. Or would they say, it's time for another revolution? What did you people do to the freedom we gave you? What did you do to the ideals we set in place?
You know, one of the things that Reagan had said that was so true, and it was, if you triple our country's problems, we are still in better shape than any other country on Earth. And it was, you know, we had many problems, and still we weren't in that bad a shape. You know?
And Bill, you bring that up every time, because a lot of us sit around here and we talk about the things we're concerned about for the future. And you, as the man of faith, always come back to the fact that America is a great place, and no matter what's going on, it is still the best country on earth. And you know what? I think we lose track of that. We get caught in the day-to-day mishmash of all this hatred and anger that's going on. And it's great that you bring us back to that, and I appreciate it, because sometimes I have a tendency to go off and get a little frustrated.
I think our country, if we can keep it going a little bit longer on a positive note, I think it will be what saves Europe again, because Europe is turning Muslim. They have absolutely no faith left whatsoever in their people, right? There's nothing. That Europe is going to go down by the wayside faster than we know what to do with it. I think if we can keep our country going, it might be the same thing as in the last world wars. You're going to have our country rise up and find a way to combat that.
That's an important thought.
Who will be left? If Europe goes, I mean, China's China, they're still communist, then the United States will be stand alone in the entire world. Most, so we better get our act together.
Africa and South America are becoming Christian faster than you knew.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again here on Chasing Justice, I think this was a great segment. I wish the whole Reagan thing would have worked. That would have been fun.
That would have been great.
You know, remember, everybody, I appreciate Kathy being here with us. Bill, the man of faith, Jim, the contrarian, and hey, we hope you're feeling better there, race car Jack.
Chicken.
I have a feeling. Wait till you see the size of Jack compared to the powerful Jim we have here. I think he's not going to be saying that face to face next week. In the meantime, everybody, have a great week. We're in the Christmas holiday season. Be nice to each other. Do something decent. Remember, be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. We'll see you next week here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.